All right, well, let's shift gears completely now and talk about a little something that hits home for everyone, and that is your electric bills. Have you noticed something strange about them recently? They've been really high this winter. The price of electricity in Massachusetts, and in fact throughout the region, has soared to the highest in the nation. But ironically, the price of gas and oil here in New England is rather low, and as we know, has been going down. Well, this week, WBUR is airing a special two-part series investigating the cost of electricity. The first part aired this morning on Morning Edition and can be heard at WBUR.org. The second story airs tomorrow. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman reported the series, and he joins me in the studio. Good to see you, Bruce.
You too, Magnum.
Okay, so first of all, what's going on here? What's going on with the price of electricity? Boy,
that is such a great question. I started out trying to figure this out by reading my electric bill, and it's really complicated. It's hard. Deregulation really changed things a few years back, and it winds up splitting bills into two. You're paying for the energy and for the delivery of the fuel. So it was supposed to make the system more competitive, and it actually did. But this winter, I got to tell you, during the coldest months, the price of electricity was not just the highest in the nation, but at times it was the highest on the planet.
On the planet. It's like adding insult to injury from what we all suffered this winter anyway. But okay, so Bruce, when I heard your story this morning, it inspired me, and I actually pulled up the electric bill for my little condo. We are Eversource customers, which, mm-hmm. Of course, used to be Enstar. And I'm looking at the delivery charges, for example. In February, the delivery charge to my house was 9.7 cents per kilowatt hour. In January, it was 11.3 cents.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It has to do with the pipelines. That's what they're saying. We don't have enough pipeline capacity to supply all of the cheap natural gas that we could potentially bring in from Pennsylvania and the Appalachian fields. But there are those who say, we don't need more pipeline. We don't need more energy. We can do it other ways. But that's the conundrum. Mm.
And that natural gas, which is powering those electric plants, 50% of the fuel that Massachusetts consumes to produce electricity.
Well, actually, it's 50% for the region.
For the region.
63% in Massachusetts. 63% of our energy, electricity in Massachusetts comes from burning natural gas.
But Bruce, explain something to me, because, you know, we, as we said in the introduction to this conversation, the price of natural gas isn't that high, or at least it's not supposed to be that. It doesn't feel that high.
And it's, and there's lots of cheap gas in the world, and it's going down. But most of our electricity these days is generated from burning natural gas. It used to be coal and oil, right? But that changed. There were environmental rules that went into place. Just 15 years ago, we got 15% of our electricity from burning natural gas. Now it's over 50s. So it's really been a different. The mix of where we get our electricity from has changed.
Wow. Okay. So overall, and on one hand, this is a good thing, right? I mean, natural gas is ostensibly a cleaner burning fuel.
Oh, absolutely. It's cleaner burning, but it's still a fossil fuel, right? So it does help us meet our greenhouse standards that we have. But as I said, the energy mix is changing, so we need more gas. We're going to be emitting more fossil fuel emissions. So while we are the most energy efficient state in the nation, 4 years in a row, by the way, we are going to need more gas to generate our electricity.
Okay, so here's the crux of the matter. On the one hand, we're the most energy efficient state, as you said. Mm-hmm. Congratulations, Massachusetts.
Yeah,
but on the other hand, more infrastructure. When I hear that phrase, I hear cha-ching money.
Yeah, big money. This is really expensive. Running pipelines is expensive. They want to run four pipelines. They expand a couple and build a couple of new ones. One that they wanted to run across the northern part of the state would have cost between $4 and $5 billion. But the other thing is, here's the point, Magna. People opposed it for a lot of reasons. The concern was that this pipeline would last 50, 100 years. And while supporters of pipelines say, you know, it's a bridge fuel, it'll get us to a renewable energy future, opponents say it's just a bridge too far. This thing will last too long. We'll become dependent on cheap gas, and that's going to fix our future to a fossil fuel.
Huh. Well, is essentially what you're saying is that are we seeing the cost of this infrastructure in our bills now?
No. As a matter of fact, they haven't been approved by the federal regulators yet. And right now we're trying to figure out, we're going to have an energy summit at the end of this month, perhaps at the beginning of April, and we're going to find out what's going to happen with that cost of that pipeline.
Oh, interesting. So consumers could still end up paying quite a bit there. All right, well, let's see if we can paint a rosier picture here. Natural gas becoming a more and more important source of fuel for electricity in the state of Massachusetts. But what about alternatives?
Well, Cape Wind Utilities just pulled the plug on buying long-term supply of energy from there. So that basically kills that project. It's dead in the water. Offshore wind that would have been further away is really on the distant horizon. That's not going to happen for a long time. And, you know, so while the state has to meet these greenhouse gas emission standards that we've got legally, if we continue to use natural gas, we are not going to meet those mandated legal standards.
Wow. So what about tomorrow's story?
Tomorrow, we discuss the energy alternative to natural gas, and it's natural gas. It's in a different form, though.
Okay. So you can hear about that tomorrow on Morning Edition. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Well, as Bruce said, Massachusetts is not on track to meet its self-mandated state greenhouse gas emissions targets. Those targets were set back in 2008 when the legislature passed the Global Warming Solutions Act. The state did release the Massachusetts Clean Energy and Climate Plan just 5 years ago, but a group is suing, saying that the plan does not include a hard cap each year to ensure that the amount of emissions will gradually decrease over time. Well, Veronica Eady is one of the lead attorneys in this case, and she's director and vice president of the Conservation Law Foundation. She joins us in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Magna.
So what exactly are you suing the state about? Its failure to comply with the Global Warming Solutions Act, or the fact that it's not doing enough or hasn't met the targets?
Well, the state's failing to implement a specific measure in the Global Warming Solutions Act, and that's the part of the Global Warming Solutions Act that requires them to issue regulations that establish a declining annual aggregate emissions limit for sources of greenhouse gases. So essentially ratcheting down how many greenhouse gases or how much we can emit by year.
I see. So basically, as you're saying, they don't have a plan that's specific enough on how over time to meet that overall target, which is 25% reduction in emissions by 2020.
Yeah. And I just want to underscore what's key here is that we're looking for an enforceable regulation.
Okay.
So they did the 2020 plan in compliance with the Global Warming Solutions Act. But this specific part requires a regulation.
Okay. And so, in what sector? Well, I guess I'm asking you, if you could craft the policy right now, what would you want the regulation to look like?
Well, you know, our case isn't really about telling DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, how to do their job. But to give you an example, if you had a power plant that had a permit to emit a certain number of, say, tons per year of greenhouse gases, if that was 1,000 tons per year in 2015, next year it would have to be something less than that, 900, and year by year, so that we're in good stead to hit the 2020 Global Warming Solutions Act goal, which is 25% below a 1990 baseline.
Okay. Now, if I understand correctly, the Clean Energy and Climate Plan that the state did release in 2010 does have some policies for fuel efficiency standards for vehicles, promoting more efficiency in the use of electricity, updating building codes, all rather important things. Why are you saying that that's not enough? I mean, I know it's short of enforceability, but it still seems substantial nonetheless.
Those things are really important parts of the equation. And as, you know, I heard from the earlier segment, you know, we're leading the nation. And we really are leading the nation on a lot of measures of curbing greenhouse gas emissions. The Global Warming Solutions Act and this particular measure is just another piece of the puzzle. It's what the legislature envisioned when they passed this piece of legislation. And so we're really just trying to get DEP to do what they were asked to do.
Right. Now, if I may ask you, I mean, the Conservation Law Foundation has a long history of leading effective legal challenges on behalf of environmental issues. But I do note that Assistant Attorney General Joanne Shotwell Kaplan has said that the current argument that the CLF is presenting, she says, is based on a groundless interpretation of the law. I'm wondering what your response is to that.
Well, naturally, we disagree with her. We are putting forth the plain language in the statute. The statute says declining annual aggregate emissions limits for sources or categories of sources of greenhouse gases, not to be too wonky. In her argument yesterday, she seemed to be rejecting the plain language, and she offered up some legislative history, basically earlier versions of the law that the legislature, for whatever reason, decided to abandon. So that's the difference in our interpretation. And I would add, interestingly, the courthouse was full. We had a full audience. It was really wonderful. And I was really pleased to see Senator Mark Pacheco in the audience, because he was one of the main crafters of this legislation as the chair of the Senate's Climate Change and Global Warming Committee.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because this act, the 2008 Global Warming Solutions Act, when passed, a lot of people really hailed as a groundbreaking piece of legislation.
And it is, which makes it all the more tragic that the Department of Environmental Protection isn't fully implementing it.
Okay. Well, finally, before I let you go, I do want to ask you, in the group of plaintiffs bringing this case, there are several young people involved. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the plaintiffs are Conservation Law Foundation, of course, Massachusetts Energy Consumers Alliance, and then four youths, Isabel Kane, Seamus Miller, Olivia Geiger, and James Coakley. And these youth, along with others, let me take a step back. In 2012, there was a group of over 300 youth who filed a petition with DEP to try to compel them to issue these regulations. And these four teenagers were the ones who decided to be plaintiffs. This is a critical issue for young people because, although in 2050, when we are required to be 80% below our 1990 levels, I'm going to be a very old person if I'm around. It's young people who are going to live with the consequences of the choices that we make today.
Well, Veronica Eady is the director and vice president of the Conservation Law Foundation, speaking to us about a lawsuit they are bringing against the state of Massachusetts for what CLF says is a failure to comply with the 2008 Global Warming Solutions Act. Veronica Eady, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Stay with us. Coming up, Mayor Marty Walsh wants a rethink on how Boston uses City Hall Plaza, and he wants your ideas. We'll take your calls and your ideas. I'm Lisa Mullins.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.